Slow down your titration because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome your host, David Innes.
B drive is much safer than an Africanized B drive. Millions turn off from reality television in favor of the next big thing, a window. Funeral directors who buried the wrong body claim to have made a grave error. We're sorry for the funeral directors here. Crumpets are tired of being objectified as sexy breakfast items. And love and marriage, as they say, go together like an idealistic middle-class fantasy. To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to the hyperbically centered Jürgen Schell.
From Mazenod College, representing animation, it's Christian Vasari. From the University of Tasmania, Launceston campus, it's Scott McAteer. From Monash University, representing medicine, it's Dr. Brad McKay. And from Princeton University, representing ecology, it's Associate Professor Martin Berg.
Responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is a bawdy time machine. It lets you go back in time, but all the historical events are played out like carry-on films. Whoa, a nice pair of amphoras there. Our centurion. Before we begin the quiz...
Is that your Python Cleopatra, or you're just happy to see
me? Before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panellists' topics? That is animation, monsters, medicine, and ecology. We'll come back to this at the end of the program, but I will give you a clue. Chomper. There's your clue. Chomper is where you've got the clue here. But we'll now begin with round one, which is called 90-second TED Talk. Each player must give a short speech on a topic relating to the field in 90 seconds. At the 60-second mark, they will hear this noise. And at the 90-second mark, which is the end, they will get this noise. At which point they must cease and desist. So, Christian, you are first, and your topic is John Crisfalusi, creator of Ren and Stimpy, genius or madman with a pencil. Christian Mazzari, your time begins now.
Thank you, David. My topic is John Kay, genius or madman with a pencil. To be quite frank, John Kay in this regard is much like a hermaphrodite. He's both. Yes. He's the creator of a cartoon which first aired in 91 about a dumb cat and a deranged chihuahua known as the Ren and Stimpy Show. In it, Ren the dog longed for large pectoral muscles, and Stimpy the cat used to pick his nose for collect magic nose goblins. But it wasn't all boogers and gross-out humour. Stimpy's first fart was the heartwarming tale of Stimpy's gas leaving his warm, safe anus to explore the world before returning to his despondent father as a man. More examples of John Kay's genius are, he's a madman. I went onto his blog and I told him about the talk, and I don't know the how, but he put this chip in my brain to make me say he's a genius, and if he does, he'll detonate it, and it's done something to me. I see cartoons everywhere. I mean, you're all cartoons, and I can't even go to the toilet anymore because it's just too goddamn wacky, and I don't want to die today. I don't want to die. So in conclusion, John Kay is brilliantly, wonderfully, and unashamedly mad. I think that should be obvious to all of you now, really. I watched his show as a child, and, well, look how I turned out. Oh, also, he owns a pencil. Thank you.
So, Christian, we've got a fair understanding of John Crisfalusi and his control on you. Are there any other animators that you know of that are either incredibly powerful, incredibly mad, or should be, you know, cornered and sanctioned?
Well, they all are just a little bit crazy. Well, Winsor McKay is kind of the grandfather of it all. Mm. He started, and he must be mad, because he did it at a time before there was such a thing as cell animation, which is the clear plastic that you lay on top so you can move it and lay it over background so you don't have to keep redrawing the background time and time again. He did this before then, which meant that he would draw the background time and time again. And his first cartoon was Gertie the Dinosaur, which is a lovely little cartoon. And it's not enough for him just to animate everything by hand, but somehow he manages to insert himself into the animation, and so he'll often interact with Gertie the Dinosaur, give it commands, and so forth.
Is he just there going, does everyone like me yet?
Near enough. Well, if that wasn't enough, there is a rather creepy one about a mosquito that lands on a man's nose, and it sucks so much blood out of this man who's asleep, it gets fat, rolls away, and it explodes. A shower of debris and blood.
I think we got all
the fun for kids.
Yeah, that's right. That little company would then become Disney. The more we learn. Our next speaker is Scott, and your topic is 5 lessons we can take from Cthulhu. Scott McAteer, your time starts now.
Cthulhu is from the H.P. Lovecraft story Call of Cthulhu, and I'm just going to run through the 5 lessons that we can learn with a little bit from the story. Okay, lesson 5. Someday, the piecing together of disassociated knowledge will open up such terrifying vistas of reality and our frightful position therein that we shall either go mad from the revelation or flee the deadly light into the peace and safety of a new dark age. The lesson there is, ignorance is bliss. Lesson 4. In the natural glade of the swamp, there stood a grassy island, perhaps an acre's extent, clear of trees and tolerably dry. On this now leaped and twisted, indescribable horde of human abnormality. Animal fury and orgiastic license here whipped themselves to demonic heights by howls and squawking ecstasies that tore and reverberated through the nighted woods like pestilential tempests from the gulfs of hell. Now and then the less organized ululations would cease, and from what seemed a well-drilled chorus of hoarse voices would rise and sing some chant that hideous phrase or ritual. And the lesson we can learn from that is church can be fun. Lesson 3. A guy called Wilcox went mad from talking to Cthulhu. You talk to people, they'll listen. Lesson 2. The prisoners all proved to be a man of low and mixed blood and mentally aberrant types. But Cthulhu accepted them. Be yourself. Finally, Cthulhu lies sleeping in his sunken city at Rileth. But what has risen may sink, and what has sunk may rise. Loathsomeness waits and dreams in the deep, and decay spreads over the tottering cities of men. A time will come. The lesson from that is, good things come to those who wait. Cthulhu can wait 1,000 years to chomp on your bones in despair. You can wait 10 minutes for that tram.
Is there any advice that you think you could interpret that Cthulhu might give to people that would typically be on a talk show, for instance? Okay, so let's just say I was very confused. Let's say I thought my partner was cheating. Let's just say, what would Cthulhu's advice be, do you think?
Cthulhu's advice would, of course, be to eat their salt.
Right, okay. That's our next speaker is Brad, and his topic is Love is a Terminal Affliction. Dr. Brad McKay, your time begins now.
Thank you, David. Throughout history, humanity has been warned of this lethal disease called love. Ancient Roman mythology portrays the god of love as Cupid, an ethereal being who prances around in angel wings, hunts people down, and then shoots them with his love arrows, rather like Mardi Gras. Many of you already know that if Cupid's arrow pierces your heart, you will instantly fall in love with the next person you see. This is closely followed by losing all rationality, self-control, and self-respect, a process clearly illustrated in the reality TV show The Bachelor. Love is a brain-eating disease, but people still like falling in love because it makes them feel good. This is like saying that viral encephalitis is fabulous because my body tingles before I fall into a coma. A love-afflicted patient will describe their symptomatology in cutesy ways to make their disease seem more socially acceptable. They will describe feeling breathless, giddy, having a dry mouth, that their heart is a flutter, they may have a racing pulse, clammy palms, and butterflies in their stomach. Medically speaking, they have dyspnea, vertigo, xerostomia, palpitations, tachycardia, hyperhidrosis, nausea, with a little bit of diarrhea. Benatar correctly informs us that love is a battlefield. Joy Division warns us that love will tear us apart. However, John Lennon incorrectly tells us that all you need is love. But without shelter, water or food, you will develop hypothermia, become dehydrated, and starve to death. Love is a terminal affliction.
Assuming, therefore, in this case, that love is terminal, therefore, I presume, has no cure, is there a series of treatments that you would recommend in order for it to, or perhaps a vaccination that could happen to prevent love from happening?
There's only two things that can really help. One is a cold shower, and the other one is thinking of your mother. And that can be terminal in its own right.
There is the third, which is eating their soul.
Yeah. Well, our final speaker for the first round is Martin, and his topic is flowers don't know if they're Arthur or Martha. Associate Professor Martin Bird, your time begins now.
Dave, we have to turn from the topic of love to the more disturbing topic of plant sex. Plants do have sex. They have sex organs, male organs called stamens and female organs called pistils. And we've all seen plants parading these sex organs openly in public, dressing them up in these petals as if every day were a Mardi Gras parade for them. And they go further than that. They go to the point of growing both male and female organs on the same plant. Yes, these plants don't know whether they're Martha or Arthur. They're both at the same time. And they do this in order to have sex with every other plant they meet, or even to self-fertilize. Now, you may say, look, what these plants do in the privacy of their own forest is none of our business. And that's fine, until we bring them into our homes and our children are affected. And I think it's time that we protect the youngest and most vulnerable members of our society from the lewd behavior of these pedophiles. So I'd like to speak directly to the youngest listeners at home. Kids, if you want to be able to grow up and be a good person and live safely, stay away from plants, and you can start by never eating vegetables. Tell mom and dad that you should go to every meal to that fast food hamburger restaurant. You know the one I mean. The food there is safe, and you'll grow up to be not only physically strong and healthy, but morally strong and healthy as well.
That talk was sponsored by KFC. Now, I'm just a question, okay, so flowers...
No, I think in the interest of full disclosure, I should claim that I have not received a cent from KFC. And so if there are any of the executives from KFC who are listening in on this, where is my check?
My question here is, okay, so we should avoid flowers at all possible costs. Is there a specific areas that, you know, should be, you know, have 18 plus, there shouldn't be children going to?
Outdoors.
At the end of that round, it seems that we've got Christian is in the lead by a furlong. So, our next round is called the Analysis and Application Round. Our panelists are to break into teams of two, and they are subjected into doing various challenges right off the cuff and impromptu. Did I say right off the cuff?
Yes.
I did. Thank you for validating my mispronunciation. Our first pairing is Christian and Scott. And I'll be challenging you to some cocktail recipes. I've got the names of some different cocktails, and I need you to come up with the ingredients and ways that you would make these particular cocktails that many of the audience may not be familiar with. The first one I want to, what is the cocktail Swing on the Stars?
Oh, Swing on the Stars.
Yeah, that old chance.
That's a good one. Mm. Let's start with Blue Curacao.
Yes.
To get the night sky to begin with.
A bit of cheap $10 Vino Gusto.
Yes, lovely.
Yeah.
And the real secret is in the mixing, in that you put it on a swing and swing it back and forth, and that it mix in that way.
Mm. Absolutely. What about the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
Yes. Well, that's an old favourite of mine.
Yeah.
You need to get a serial killer and just ring them in. So a drop of Ted Bundy should do. And then, in fact, it used to have a different ingredient, and it was known as a Ted Bundy and cola. So once you've got the serial killer in, then of course you get your tomatoes.
Yeah.
And just let him do the rest, really. That's pretty much it. Very simple.
Yeah.
But,
non-alcoholic as well.
Yes, and by golly does it ever put you in the mood, too. Many times I've just sat at home and...
A couple of 10 bucks.
Well, oh my god. Peel me off the ceiling. It's just,
remember that time you knocked back like 6 John Cases in a row?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I couldn't find my pants.
You were really eating souls that evening.
Oh my goodness.
What about the grammar school initiation?
Well, this is one of Scott's favourites.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it starts with tequila. Of course, because you start with a tequila layback in that you're laying back, and then what you do is you spend 5 hours reading Latin texts
while the teacher corrects you on your Latin.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely. And finally, the Clive Palmer.
Ah, yes. Well, basically, you just find Clive at the local pub while he's eating a pub. And when he's not looking, you just give him a quick punch in the back of the head. And when he's knocked down, face down in the palmer, you just pour some water on that. And you just funnel off the drippings into a bucket. And
he's
quite a sweaty man.
Yeah.
And it gives this tang that I just can't quite describe, but it is magical. It dances upon the tongue.
And ladies and gentlemen, Christian and Scott! Brad and Martin, I'll be challenging you to an advertisement. So together, I would like you to create an infomercial type advertisement on a philosophical or unsellable concept. And the one that I would like you to sell for me is an inkless pen.
Introducing the new Bic Zero.
It layers a 0.0 millimeter spread on your page.
With nothing in particular.
If you get in trouble at school for tagging, no more trouble!
Do you ever write down notes to yourself of something you want to forget?
On lockup day, will you get in trouble for writing on your own school uniform? Not anymore.
If these things happen to you, you need the new Bic Zero. If you need to ask the price, you really can't afford it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Martin and... I just heard the soul destroyed. I think Cthulhu's just eaten the soul of the audience. So what was that noise again? Thank you very
That's
much.
That's what Cthulhu sounds like.
Okay.
Much obliged. At the end of that round, Scott is in the lead by a factor of 3. But our next round is called the Stumble, Mumble, or Bumble. The players are challenged to give impromptu responses to ridiculous topics. If they stumble, mumble, or bumble, other members of the panel can make a noise like this. Or alternatively, I can go and nominate another panel member to take over. Our first speaker is Scott, and your question is, what are monsters afraid of?
Ah, see, monsters are mostly afraid of small children, because when children stop believing in them, they start to disappear. That's why monsters decide to frighten little children, to give them hope that sometimes something will make sense to them. Children grow up to be adults and nothing makes sense to them. Adults aren't afraid of anything.
There was a stumble there, I'm going to throw it over to Brad.
The smaller the child, the more frightened the monster, the further they run. That's why they're disappearing, because they're way in the distance. So I evoke everyone to get the smallest child possible to be their best protection.
I'm going to stop you there, because it's a bit creepy. I'm going to throw it over to Christian.
Although, truly, this is all quite frivolous, because really, the real monsters are children themselves. And it's just monsters afraid of looking at themselves and finding what lurks beneath and confronting it and dealing with it that scares them the most.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to the next topic. We're going to start with Martin. And the topic is about ants, actually. We can learn so much from ants.
Ants are quite a deal smarter than most humans, and collectively they're quite a bit smarter. We can learn, for example, how to hold picnics, because ants always come to picnics. They're really enthusiastic about it.
I'm going to have to stop you there. Because it's too much of a Sunday afternoon. I'm going to give it over to Scott.
Most novels that reach the bestseller list are actually written by ants. Stephen King, well-known ant, he's actually a collection of several ants wearing a suit that he made out of plastic. The plastics industry
interesting enough, are also run mostly by ants, but beetles do the bulk of the work in the plastic industry. I don't know why this is. Some say that it's because ants are essentially racist and are keeping down the beetles.
I'm afraid we have to stop you there because you're getting too close to the truth. Coming up to Christian with the next topic, Warner Brothers versus Disney. Fight!
Well, really, what's there to say? Warner Brothers rules and Disney is okay if you like that sort of thing. I mean, Warner Brothers has Looney Tunes such as Donald Duck? That's not right!
I've got to have to stop. I've got to have to stop you there because the animation expert got an animation question wrong.
I had an animation aneurysm.
I'm going to get Brad to take over from that topic.
Disney does have the best songs in comparison to Warner Brothers. There is, what was it, Let It Go? Is that the latest one from Frozen? I think that's the...
I'm not sure because I'm not eight.
Oh, damn.
And finally, I'm going to
make that musical theatre.
I'm going to give it over to Martin to continue the next one. Is there anything that spaghetti bolognese can't fix?
Oh no, you can use it to fix almost anything. Broken shoes, broken bridges, the economy. Really, there's nothing that spaghetti bolognese... But it does have to be spaghetti bolognese.
Oh, what can't it be then?
Well, it can't be one of these, you know, sort of tarted up, newfangled pastas. No, good old-fashioned, hard-working spaghetti bolognese. That's
thank you very much. And at the end of that round, please give them a round of applause! What was the connection between all our topics, which was animation, monsters, ecology, and medicine? Does anyone on the panel have a clue as to what the connection might be?
I have the hardest. They all began with A, except for the last three.
There's a very well-known, I can't remember the name of it, though, the 1960s animation Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's your answer to everything. It's something Frankenstein-related.
It's Frankenstein-related. It's a big topic.
Does anyone in the audience have a clue what it might be?
Moonshot
of the
Forest?
You are absolutely right! Well done! All the point. In fact, the audience gets the prize, so the audience will be having the body time machine. But just to explain how the things connect, for the medicine aspect, there is the character of the dentist in Little Shop of Horrors as well. For ecology, we're dealing with plants that go and eat and interact with their with people because by eating them. With monsters, we've got Audrey 2 being the monsters. And as for the animation, what you might not be familiar with, do YouTube this, people. There was a short-lived, terrible 80s cartoon called Little Shop, which was, I believe, an anthology series that was introduced by Audrey 2. So there was an Audrey 2 play. But now it remains for me to total the points, and the winner of our show, and also will be sharing our bawdy time machine with the audience, is Associate Professor Martin Bird! That is the end of the program. I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. Now just leaves me to thank our panel, Christian Bizarro, Scott McAteer, Dr. Brad McKay, Associate Professor Martin Bird, our announcer Jürgen Schaub, our composer Matthew Handcraft, Damien Sutton and the Wesleyan. I have been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day! This has been a Cthulhu's Eating Your Soul production.